Good evening, Seattle, Little Saigon, and all places from here on the West Coast, all the way to the East Coast, all the way to the Carolinas. It is October the 22nd, 2019, and it is 1900 hours for those of you currently patrolling deep space for the Queensland Navy of the Secret Space Program. It is 1900 hours. We got some upcoming shows to talk about for the Little Saigon Report. Next week is Halloween, and I'm going to be doing a special show from Des Moines, Washington at my sister's place. And the topic of the show is going to be ghost stories. You know, different ghost stories, scary things that have happened to us, stuff like that. I also have a show coming up. Somebody who is a listener, we recently spoke on the phone, and I think we're going to discuss this idea, this concept of a very, what I would call a simplified abstract dam. And what I mean by this is the following. Dams, essentially, and a dam being, you know, hydroelectric power, dams essentially store potential energy. And the idea behind an abstract dam is you take the concept of storing potential energy, but you remove the water. So, for example, if you can imagine a well, like you're digging a well 200 feet deep, perhaps, you know, a meter or two in diameter, and in the well you place a weight. And the weight is on a pulley, and the pulley is connected to a system of gears, and the gears are connected to essentially an alternator. So when the battery is charging, which means either solar or something else is powering the alternator, or even just physical work, like you could have a hand crank, you're essentially lifting the weight. Okay, you're lifting the weight. The weight is at the bottom. That means there's zero charge in that abstract dam battery, you know, whatever. When the weight is at the top of the cylinder, or at the top of the well, you're at full charge. The idea is this. This is the kind of power storage that is very, very low-tech. Extremely low-tech. In fact, so low-tech that a decent engineer who is adequate at basically forging metals and whatnot, a decent engineer with basically a forge and a wrecking, you know, an old junkyard could probably build this himself or herself. It is very low-tech, and it literally is just an abstract representation of how a dam stores energy. Now, in the case of the dam, it recharges from water, from rainfall that comes down through streams. That's how a hydroelectric dam recharges. In this case, it's really up to the person how they want to recharge. Like I said, with the right kind of gearing and the right system, you could theoretically recharge it with a hand crank. Now, of course, it would take a while, but the point is, it's a matter of how much potential energy you want to store. So yeah, I don't want to go too deep into it right now, but there's a person that listens to my podcast. Pretty cool dude. I got a lot of cool listeners out there across the universe. And we will probably have an hour or more to talk about the concept of these very low-tech ways of storing energy. My sister is going to visit my nephew, who is currently, well, technically he's in deep space, running for his life. His human body is in a canister someplace under Utah. But my sister and her husband are going to go visit my nephew for Thanksgiving. Somehow, my nephew needs to make it home. He's still about 7 light years away. But this is related to some special shows, plural, coming up. We're going to call them All About Beans. It turns out that because I'm currently in a state of retirement, being that I am a finite state machine with the following states of work, where I'm working some fucking contract for Google or Amazon or Microsoft or some motherfucker, and then there are states of retirement and when I'm in a state of retirement, I really can't, you know, look my nose down at making a few bucks here and there. And although my sister didn't explicitly say she was going to pay me to watch Beans, over Thanksgiving, I will be watching Beans. I will be watching Beans as my nephew and the ragtag crew of the Bishop of Vagina make their way home for Christmas. And this time, he has to be home for Thanksgiving. This is going to be a lot of planes, trains, and fucking transport devices, quantum entanglement, and otherwise. But can you imagine spending Thanksgiving with Beans, the French Bulldog? Knowing what I know now, my plan is essentially to treat it like a scientific project. I'm going to observe Beans. I'm going to record the utterances he makes and put together a general model of his existence as a French bulldog, and thereby develop an argument that I can put before the Hague Court of Arbitration, a case against the American Kennel Club for crimes against humanity, for allowing the wretched French bulldog to come into existence to plague this world with its hermit crab eyes. If I can convince those fuckers at the Hague Court, then we can start killing the French Bulldogs immediately for their protein. Now you might say a French Bulldog's meat is probably toxic as fuck. I mean rancid, because they eat their own vomit and their own poop. It is true, the French Bulldog eats its own vomit and its own poop, but if you soak a French Bulldog in water that contains 20%, a solution of 60% water, 60% water, 20% hydrogen peroxide, and the other 20% is bleach. And if you soak the French Bulldog in a bucket of this solution for 2 or 3 days, the bucket will be filled with a nasty brownish, blackish, greenish gumpus. But then you can remove the French Bulldog and the skin will simply fall right off the body. And that's how you prepare. That's the first step to preparing French Bulldog. But yes, if we can convince the Hague Court that the French Bulldog is an abomination and that the American Kennel Club are a bunch of fucking Nazis, fucking mutating dogs that are barely protein dog, I think that a French Bulldog is technically a partially aborted dog. You can tell. All dogs basically look like French Bulldogs in the first couple of hours of existence. And sometimes, if you interrupt the process with any dog at around the first week of pregnancy, you'll get French Bulldogs. And if you quickly pull them out of the munkus and you apply the ancient Egyptian words that are found in the Necronomicon, then you can revive these tiny aborted things, and they become the French Bulldogs that fear both their own existence and the monstrosity that created them. Anyways, I will be spending Thanksgiving with beans. We will be able to observe beans. I will try to take videos of beans. I will put them through various types of tests and experiments. Hopefully, by the time my sister and her husband get back, beans will be more mentally stable, more clear thinking, and I even think I'll train him how to wipe his own butt. Now, technically, a French bulldog can't lick its own butt. That's one of its many fucking defects. Add that to they cannot reproduce without a turkey baster. But yeah, I will train him. I will create what I call the butt poop remover, and I will train him to use it, and then I will market that to people that own Frenchies online. And I will make $1.5 million by the year 2022. Of course, that will pay for 2 months' rent and 16 pounds of French bulldog meat. First topic. I have been watching American Horror Story pretty much since it debuted in the year 2011. It is a TV show produced by the networks, and the networks are controlled. So if I am saying I like the show, I'm also saying I like my propaganda. But here's the deal. A couple seasons of this show weren't so bad. They weren't so virtue signaling. They weren't so filled with political crap. I'll tell you that the last few seasons of that fucking show have been filled with bullshit symbolism and bullshit political crap and a whole bunch of fucking vagina power bullshit. Anyways, this season's kind of cool. It's got synthwave. It's got synthwave music. It's all set in the year 1984, someplace in the mountain country of California. And it's actually so far not so bad. Now, of course, there are certain things that globalist shows like this must do, like denigrate Christians. And of course, it does a good job of that. It connects Christianity to Charles Keating, our favorite guy involved in the savings and loan crisis of the late 1980s. Yeah, it's got some fucking Christianity bashing. Or if I put it this way, if this television show treated Islam the way that it feels comfortable treating Christians, I think a lot of real beheadings would occur. But no, everyone's okay with beating up on Christians. That's just it. You can watch any. Anyways, I like the TV show. I'm just mentioning that this because it's had some really shitty seasons that are filled with political crap, but this season so far seems not so bad, in which these days, not so bad is pretty fucking good. I was a teenager back in 1984. I was technically 14. See how easy it is to keep track of my fucking age? I was 14 in 1984. So yeah. I totally like the show so far. It's got a lot of really good references to the 80s. All of them kind of make sense. And in some ways, it's like looking back to like a simpler age. Although truly, that's always bullshit too. Anyways, I'm just mentioning this because I kind of thought, well, if you're looking for a show to watch, it isn't too terrible. If you're a Christian like me, you're going to get a little offended. At one point, essentially, one of the characters says that if you believe in God, anything you do is okay. I've read my Bible and I have been lacking on going to church recently, but when I go to church, I have never heard my pastor say, if you believe in God, you can do anything you want to. So, yeah, let's get real. This season is pretty good, but bottom line, if you're easily offended by any TV show that beats up on Christians, I would probably tell you, warning, like most of the crap on TV now, Christians are fair game. Next topic, Tulsi Gabbard. I'm gonna say this again, folks. I got this feeling. I got this feeling because the narrative makes sense now. I have this feeling that Tulsi Gabbard is the weird Obama, Bill Clinton, mad kind of hybrid set up to essentially win in 2020. And all the drama, and I mean drama, I mean acting, and not very good acting, but all the drama between Hillary and Tulsi, wow. It reminds me of the few times I could watch the World Wrestling Federation. All these fucking references and soap operas. You're a Russian spy. No, you're a Russian spy. Folks, it's too fucking ridiculous to be real. It's bullshit. It's exactly like Madonna kissing Britney Spears. It's this kind of weird satanic symbolism. But in this case, it isn't like Madonna kissing Britney Spears. It's more like Madonna if she kissed... Oh, I always forget that one woman's name. Anyways, there's this one singer who's been around for a while. I kind of block her from memory for some reason. But essentially, yeah, whether it's... Whatever, I don't really know pop culture. The point is, this thing between Hillary and Tulsi, it is so contrived. And I'm surprised by so many people getting turned on by it, like actually believing it, to the point, and this is what's interesting, that you find conservatives defending Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard wants to take your guns. Let's just make that clear. Tulsi Gabbard claims to be anti-war, but she has not resigned her commission, and she was commissioned after 9/11, which means that either she was oblivious to it, or she completely knew it was a pile of bullshit, and she still chose to serve. But in either case, she served during some of the worst years of American military practice ever. She served when the United States really embraced being a nasty world empire. That's when she chose to fucking serve. So her whole anti-war thing isn't really that believable. And if you add in the fact that the history of all political candidates, specifically anti-war candidates, is a joke. It's how they win. It's how Wilson won. It's how FDR continued to win, even though he figured out how to get us into war. Listen, if a Democrat tells you they're anti-war, all that means is they're going to wait 2 months, not one, before they start the next war. That's all that means. Oh, God, what is her name? I got to look it up now, because I hate these words and names just dropping out of consciousness and shit. Okay, so it was basically Lady Gaga I was thinking of. It doesn't really matter, folks. I just don't even get it. I don't understand it, really. I do and I don't, but it's funny because it turns out that if Hillary hates something, every Trump voter instantly loves it. And it's kind of ridiculous. It's like a fucking whistle behavior. You know, it's like operant conditioning. It's like they're so fucking conditioned now. If Hillary were to attack people who were transsexuals, I think you would see a bunch of fucking Trumpsters, you know, questioning their fucking gender identity. That's how fucking ridiculous and reflexive this is. It's ridiculous. It's stimulus response. There's no real thought involved. I think Tulsi Gabbard is more or less a stealth candidate, completely contrived, completely engineered, right from the fucking beginning, to have a very clean record, which means she doesn't have a lot of shit in her past. My guess is, right from the beginning, like right from college, she was being groomed. Because, I mean, basically she started running for office in college, or at least just after. So a lot of the stuff about her doesn't make a lot of fucking sense. It really doesn't. I think she's going to be the Democratic nominee. I think it's being set up like that. I think she's got the brand. She's got the demographic. She has everything. If you put her together with Beto O'Rourke, and if she stays on task, which means she doesn't get too specific... Listen, the reason why Obama and Bill Clinton did so fucking well, and this applies to some extent to Bush and Trump, they did well because they never got that fucking specific. You know, a lot of their promises were kind of vague, and frankly, they knew that most people didn't have an attention span. It's like Trump saying during one of the debates that Hillary will be in jail within 30 days after he takes office. It's been more than 30 days, Trump voters. And I know you listen to Q, and Q tells you everything's okay. I know you do. But Q might be bullshit. I'm just being honest here, folks. Q might be total bullshit. Just FYI. The other thing that's interesting about the Tulsi-Beto combo is that when you put the first letters of both of their quote-unquote nicknames, Tulsi and Beto, together, you end up with the word tube. And there's a surfing term called tubular. And obviously, people are out there on YouTube. So it's weird. It's weird. You know, you could have a really easy fucking license plate that just said Tube 2020. And the funny thing is that it really could take off. That kind of simple fucking word would get stuck in people's heads. It'd be like, tube, I'm going tube. What are you doing, tube? YouTube? YouTube. Tube. So yeah, I think the Tulsi Gabbard Beto O'Rourke combination could be rather interesting. And also, Beto is only a little bit removed from the word beta. So there's just too much to this combo that appeals to too many people on the left. She's so capable of playing to the left. She's very skilled at moving towards a lot of shit that's kind of a lot of socialistic bullshit. And yet, she carries around what I serve in the fucking military. Folks, the military is one of the biggest fucking socialist organizations on planet Earth. That's what I was in the military. I'm telling you that it's a lot of socialist bullshit. If you want to believe that it's socialism with a purpose, fine. But when you go in the military, you're essentially going into a socialist society. Everything's provided for you. Everything's given to you. Everything's taken care of. Of course, a lot of that's bullshit too, but that's what, you know, you're led to believe. So I don't really care that she has served or is serving. That's irrelevant to me. It's disturbing to me that people claim she's anti-war, but they don't recognize that her participation in those wars was a legitimation. That's what it was. She legitimized those fucking wars by participating. This is a voluntary military service. This is a voluntary army. Okay? You have to choose to go do this shit. And if you're doing it as an officer, there's a whole bunch of fucking choices you have to make. So, yeah, her anti-war street cred, I don't really buy it. Tube 2020, I know it's crazy, folks. I know you're saying, Dan, you're insane. How could it be Tulsi Gabbard and Beto O'Rourke, Democratic candidate for president Tulsi Gabbard, vice president Beto O'Rourke? How could that happen in 2020? I am telling you that you need to throw away any notion that you live in a fucking democracy. Because even if you did, it would still be a nightmare. But you don't. You know what the lesson of Brexit is? That little experiment in democracy over across the fucking pond? What is the lesson of Brexit? That you can vote as much as you want to. But the people in control are never going to give you the power back. They're never going to give it away. The only thing you can do is take it. You can protest as much as you want to, but the people in power will use whatever technology they can, including 12-gauge shotgun shell taser shells. So many Trumpers were so happy about showing, which is really funny when you think about, you know, freedom of speech and organization and shit. Weird. Anyways, I saw some people posting these memes about these shotgun shells to tase protesters. I'm thinking, dude, lots of conservatives protest. Lots of people who call themselves libertarians and defenders of freedom protest. So basically you're saying you're okay with shooting protesters. With a taser bullet. Well, for those of us over the age of 50, your kindness and concern is so fucking overwhelming. Tulsi Beto 2020. Book it. Book it. It's a real thing. It's going to happen. I'm telling you. Next topic. It is a commonly stated thing that human beings are the only beings that kill for pleasure. We are the only living things on planet Earth that kill for pleasure. I know that that has been repeated as a cliche throughout my entire life. I don't actually know that that's true. In fact, I think it's something that you should research, because I don't believe it's true. You know, I've watched cats and dogs over the years, and I got to tell you something. When they're exhibiting hunting behaviors, when they're doing their things as predators, they're having fun. As much fun as we do. I have no doubt that dogs and cats dream of chasing smaller animals. And I have no doubt that cats dream of eating them. So I think it's a bit ridiculous when they say that we are the only beings that kill for pleasure. I don't buy it at all. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this topic, but I thought, you know, it's worth just mentioning. It's one of those things that's weird. You know, Freud, and I'm not a big fan of Sigmund Freud. I read a lot of his stuff when I was younger, but I just don't want to talk about it. I know about the connection with Edward Bernays. I know that a lot of his stuff is probably a kind of propaganda bullshit. But he did say a couple things. And one of the things he said was, is that along with the eros, you know, the erotic impulses of the psyche, there is thanatos. There is this death impulse. And people do have it, this death instinct. And people do often derive pleasure from that, at least according to Sigmund Freud. And that can be taken, you know, governments can take advantage of that, really. Anyways, I thought I would throw this thought out there, kind of like on my laundry list of weird thoughts. Are we the only creatures that kill for pleasure? I don't think we are. I think there are lots of complex creatures like us, including orca whales. I mean, orca whales probably, when they're hunting, enjoy it. I'm just being honest. You look at the way they do things together, working as a team. I think they have fun. Now, does that mean it's all good and happy? Well, I don't know. It depends upon what side of the teeth you're on. You know, teeth as in T-E-E-T-H, teeth. It depends upon which side of the teeth you're on. If you're on the right side of the teeth, if you're not in the teeth, it's all good. But once you go down the gullet, it sucks. So I suppose if you're a fucking sea lion being hunted by orcas, it kind of sucks. But yeah, orcas look like they're having fun when they're hunting. So I don't know the answer. I feel like you can go research this if you want to, but is it really true that human beings are the only living things on Earth that kill for pleasure? Next topic. There are some strange things happening in Little Saigon. Strange disappearances that cannot be explained. There's an organization amongst the homeless of Little Saigon and this organization calls itself the Gronkus Committee. They are the overseers of every dread night here in Little Saigon. They go by another name. They call themselves also the Gronkus Lords. The Gronkus Lords rule the streets now of Little Saigon. If you want to know if it's safe out there, it depends about the time of day. They scurry about the streets of Little Saigon. They hide in the garbage cans and the shady places. The Gronkus Lords of Little Saigon are fanning out across Seattle, forming thug armies in Ballard. Various shock troops, someplace out there in West Seattle, not far from, I don't know, They're all over the place. They're in Magnolia. They're in fucking, Queen Anne, Belltown. The Gronkus Lords are going everywhere. And everybody's wondering, why are they out there? Why is there this group called the Gronkus Lords organizing the homeless in Seattle, organizing them? Call them the Gronkus Committee. That's how they started. And then they started calling themselves the Gronkus Lords. And now their tags are everywhere. Their tags are all over Seattle. You see the big GL everywhere. You want to know why they're doing what they're doing? You want to know why the Gronkus Lords are forming up armies and units and fashioning weapons and building forges to create their own knives and swords? You want to know why they're out there doing that? You want to know why they're out there making notes and keeping track? They're not really killing that many people yet. They're mostly observing, tracking us. We think they're harmless, but they're tracking us. They're keeping track of where we live. If we walk home with someone, or if we walk home alone, they're keeping track of where we're going. They know if you live in Little Saigon, where you live. So I would tell you to be careful out there, but I don't think any of you would listen to me. This hour of the Little Saigon Report is brought to you by Little Saigon Pest Removal Service. There are many services that take care of pests in Seattle now. Little Saigon Pest Removal Service has been in business since 1986. They specialize in removing all sorts of pests. Are you going through a divorce? Is this legal bullshit tearing you to pieces? Is that woman who dumped you, who cheated on you, taking you to the fucking ringer? Then come to Little Saigon Pest Removal Service because we might be able to help you. Yep. Do you have a parent that is currently on life support, draining the funds of your fucking trust fund because you're a trust fund baby in waiting? You have to pretend to your friends that you care, but all you want to do is have that switch turned off so you can get the money and buy all the cocaine and go to Vegas and hang out with hookers. Contact Little Saigon Pest Removal Service. Talk to Charlie. Are you having a problem with your boss at work? Maybe it's an issue with your neighbor. Is your neighbor not mowing his or her lawn? Or worse yet, does your neighbor peek through the window slit of your bathroom to look at your wife mowing her lawn? Contact Little Saigon Pest Removal Service because we know how to take care of things. Talk to Chantal. She knows how to deal with peeping toms. There are lots of options you have for taking care of problems or pests. There are lots of services. You can even do it yourself. That can be messy. Little Saigon Pest Removal Service has a multi-layered financial separation model. That means that any transaction we engage in with you amounts to a stealth transaction that the IRS or the FBI or Interpol cannot track. So please, by all means, instead of solving the problem yourself, contact Little Saigon Pest Removal Service. Ask them about their Saturday night special. Ask him about Bob. Don't hesitate. Don't wait. If you've got a problem you need to solve, contact Little Saigon Pest Removal Service, operating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and twice on Sunday. For the baby Jesus. The Gronkus Lords are out there, folks. If you think that what's coming is normality, ask yourself this. Why would Puget Sound Energy, and I know I've mentioned this before, but why would Puget Sound Energy have really cute little claymation stop-motion commercials normalizing blackouts? Those commercials are not designed for adults, people. Just like Joe Camel was not designed for adults. Little cutesy commercials telling the kiddies that it's all okay that the power's out because you can touch your fucking smartphone and Satan will touch you and make you feel better inside. Next topic, perhaps the last topic for tonight, I don't know. I've been really off, but maybe, I don't know. I have spoken about Greta Thunberg, and I need to think about this with you folks. We need to think for a second, and we need to revisit this, because I think a lot of people are getting, well, spun up by little Greta Thunberg, the sailing witch hunter from Europe, the Swedish witch hunter. She is too fucking manufactured, to be real. Hansel, Gretel, Greta, she is quite literally the inverted victim of some fairy tale from the 19th century. And when I say inverted, she is now the hero. Now she kills the witches and kills the fucking monsters, and she goes around doing that shit. She has all the power. She's not real, folks. She's not real. Governments, kings, empires, emperors have used fools like Greta Thunberg throughout history. And the purpose of a fool is not to make a foolish issue seem more foolish. If you believe that's the case, I just don't know what to tell you. Think about it. Why would you attempt to make an issue that mocks itself, that parodies itself? Why would you attempt to lather on more foolishness? It's ridiculous. The only purpose of a fool is to take a serious issue and make it seem foolish. That's it. That's the purpose. You pick a fool to basically stand in front of a serious issue, whether it's Al Gore, he's a fool. Little Greta's a fool. Anytime Leonardo DiCaprio gets up and says, don't eat hamburgers, and then gets in his fucking plane and flies someplace to have a cheeseburger, he's a bigger fucking fool. They're all fools. Why would you have fools in front of a foolish issue? Why would you do that? Why would a government spend money? Why would the deep state spend resources? And this is deep state money, folks. The campaign to make climate change and global warming look foolish is funded by the deep state. I hate to break it to you, the oil companies are connected to the deep state. The money for these campaigns comes from the deep state. Oh yeah, you know the shale miracle? The one that Obama and the Republicans signed up every American for the derivatives for, the fucking junk bonds for, in December of 2014? That miracle that required the American people to be on the hook for bad debt? That fucking oil miracle? You remember that one? Yeah, this money is used to convince people that a serious issue is foolish. Now, does that mean or imply that climate change or global warming caused by people is a thing? No. There is no logical connection between those two things. But what it does mean is you're being fucked with. And I can't think of an example of why a government would use a fool to make a foolish issue more foolish. It makes no fucking sense. Throughout history, that's never been the fucking case. But I will tell you, throughout history, governments love to use fools. They love to use the court jester to make fun of something serious. That is why the court jester is there. Little Greta Thunberg is another court jester. Al Gore is and was a court jester. There are lots of these court jesters out there doing their little jester dance. And their entire purpose is to take a serious issue and make it seem fucking ridiculous. That's why before you fucking decide that because the Koch brothers funded a fucking documentary or something, before you decide to believe their bullshit, do a little bit of fucking thinking. What I know for a fact is this. If there's a problem with the weather, if there's a problem with the ecosystem, if there's a problem with human beings tearing up the planet, the main culprit is government. The main culprit is 100 years of Keynesian central bank debt-driven bullshit. That's what caused it. If this is a problem, it wasn't created by rational people making rational fucking decisions. It was created by institutions created in the darkness of night. Fucking 2013. Excuse me, 1913. In the darkness of night. 1913, in the darkness of night, we end up with the fucking Federal Reserve and the IRS. These institutions were created by government for government. They have nothing to do with freedom. And these institutions were the basis of 100 years of pulling forward probably about 10,000 years of economic demand. I don't care what your basic cosmology is. Do you really believe life is that nonlinear? Or better yet, have you ever seen a loved one die of cancer? Because I can tell you something. These economic growth rates you believe in and the rate of cancer growth, there's a similarity there. There's a connection. Your body can only handle so many tumors. Guess what? The planet Earth can probably only handle so many apex predators. And I gotta tell you, we're not an apex predator. We're not like the snakehead fish. We're not like the great white shark. We're not like the Bengal tiger or the polar bear. We kill all of them. We eat everything. In fact, our only real competitor so far on planet Earth is our little friend, the bacteria. And I think the jury's out on who's going to be here in the end. Because they've been the heavyweight champion since the beginning. So yeah, bacteria may inherit the Earth because they always have. Little Greta the Witch Hunter. You have to ask yourself this one scary question. If she's going around telling people the stuff she's telling people, making global warming seem like bullshit, why would the deep state spend resources to make global warming seem like bullshit? Because she's just not serious. There's nothing about her that's real. She is a joke designed to make an issue look like a joke. Why would you make a joke look more like a joke? It makes no fucking sense. Next fucking topic. What if I told you that the main U.S. export at this point, and ignore all the fucking statistics that you think are true from the BLS and the Federal Reserve and all the other economic data on trade, ignore all that bullshit because I have no idea if it's true or false. I mean, I would suggest going to shadowstats.com if you want any attempt at a little dose of reality. But even John Williams' site, shadowstats.com, even his site, I have to ask myself, is it really the truth? Are the United States our number one export right now? And when I say right now, I would say for the last few decades, our number one export, probably since the establishment of the petrodollar, has been counterparty risk. That's what we export. That's our number one export. That's what we sell. We sell risk to other parties. Counterparty risk. We give them risk. We say, oh, you want to buy some oil? Well, if you want to buy oil, you've got to use dollars, the petrodollar, you know. And it was that way for a long time. Like, basically, that was the system from the early 1970s until, frankly, the 2000s. And then all of a sudden, that system started breaking down. And people said, you know, hey, why can't I sell oil for euros or oil for something else? The bottom line is this. What we export is not stuff. Yeah, we export some stuff. But most of our economy now, the guts of it, is counterparty risk. Think about it. The last financial crisis, the bailout of General Motors. What was the main component of General Motors that was tits up? Was it the core car production business? Or was it GMAC? General Motors credit vehicle for basically developing loans so they can sell cars to people. It was GMAC. It was the counterparty risk department of General Motors that went tits up. It was the main money maker prior to the crisis. The main money maker was counterparty risk, selling it, getting people to buy it. Oh yeah, buy it, take it. This risk, we're going to sell it to you. You're going to pay us back. You'll get a fucking car. It's wonderful. We could go into things like derivatives products. I mean, I have no idea how much of a black pool economy there is because I'm just a schmuck in Little Saigon. I've heard estimates that the derivatives overhang on the planet Earth right now is somewhere between 1,000 trillion and 4 quadrillion, which is 4,000 trillion. Now, if the current world GDP is somewhere shy of 80 trillion, yeah, at any interest rate much above zero, you never, ever, 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 ever pay that back. Ever. And the official above water debt, which means the official government debt worldwide, I think that's estimated around 300 trillion. And in reality, or 400, somewhere just shy of 500 trillion. But the reality is this, and that's just the public government debt. That doesn't include corporate bond debt. That doesn't include private consumer debt. There is not enough juice in the economy to service it. All of it is counterparty risk. That's it. The whole thing. That's what we export. That's what we make. You want to know what we make mostly in the United States now? We make bad contracts. We make contracts that we know will fail by definition. We are even beginning to engineer interest rates that mathematically guarantee that whatever you buy as an investment will fail, if only by slices. What the fuck? You buy a bond that's going to be worth less? You know, maybe not worthless, but worth less in 20 years. Why would you buy a 20-year bond that will give you less money in the future than you have today. That makes zero fucking sense. The only reason why you would do that is the belief that there is no other place to put your money. That's it. That's the only reason why you would buy a shitty bond that yields a negative interest rate. Otherwise, it's madness. And frankly speaking, if the interest rate is too high and the term is too long, it's a self-destructing fucking bond. It might even be worse. It's a slave bond because at some point, the negative interest rate turns the bond into a debt. Yeah, it turns the credit into a debit. Oh my God, that's the nature of these negative interest rates. You could eat up the whole fucking bond. So what if after 20 years, instead of having nothing, the Federal Reserve said, well, listen, buddy, you bought one of our T-bills at minus 5% over 20 years, and it turns out that all the money disappeared 2 years ago, and you owe us 50 grand. The main export of the U.S. economy right now is counterparty risk, and that's all I'm going to say. Next fucking topic. I am overweight. I am not proud of this. I'm probably about, I don't know, my guess is 70 pounds overweight, 60 to 70. If I could lose 40 to 50 pounds and just stay there for the rest of my life, I would consider that fine. Where I'm at right now isn't great, but it's not the end of the world. You know, it's not something that I can't turn around. I'm not here to talk about that, but I was thinking about this whole obesity issue. And I'm going to throw something on the table. Obesity is clearly related to the sedentary lifestyle. I know this because I work in IT, and IT is the worst. And even with all these, you know, desks where you can stand up and shit, it's not a job where you get a lot of healthy work done. You don't get to do things like use all your muscles. Yeah, you get to use your brain, but even that becomes a kind of health stress issue because all of a sudden when you get home at night, your brain is filled with knots and you don't want to do shit except for disconnect. So yeah. It's a really unhealthy job if you work in IT. I just got to say that. It's not good for you. And no amount of standing at your desk solves that. It really doesn't. So I do think obesity is the result of a sedentary lifestyle. And I would also agree that it's a result of really bad diets. But I'm going to throw something else on the table as a further potential cause. And I'm just going to throw it on the table, and you can meditate on it, and you can think I'm an idiot or not. But what if one component of obesity is an immune system response? Which is to say that, well, okay, let me back up a bit. And again, you can research this yourself. There were a lot of Air Force airmen who worked in the Air Force during the Vietnam War that worked with Agent Orange. And Agent Orange is a chemical defoliant, really toxic. It's still a terrible tragedy in Southeast Asia today because it stays in the environment and it's caused a lot of problems, caused a lot of birth defects, a lot of cancer. A lot of airmen that worked with Agent Orange during the Vietnam War got cancer. Some got it fairly quickly. Some didn't get it until much later. And one of the studies showed that it was partially because they retained the toxins in their fat, in their adipose fat, and it wasn't until many years later when some people tried to lose weight that they actually started to be exposed to this massive cascade of toxins. It is a matter of, I think, scientific study at this point, and I think most people that work in this field would agree that fats absorb a lot of toxins. A lot of toxins are absorbed by fats. Fats act as almost a natural sink or filter for toxins. And so if you're in a toxic environment and you have a few extra pounds, in theory, that weight could actually be an immune system response to your environment. Now, I know that sounds insane, but I don't know that it is. The immune system is a very advanced, very complicated thing. It's almost as intelligent in its own way as the central nervous system. And in many ways, it exhibits a high level of intelligence that we barely understand. What if the immune system, when it deals with toxicity, okay, when it deals with poisons, what if it triggers an immune system response so that people retain additional fat? Now, again, this is basically a conjecture. Okay, it's not even a hypothesis. This is just a conjecture. This is just a fancy-ass opinion. But I'm throwing it on the table, and I'm not even sure it's original. Like, I'm sure that somebody that studies the immune system in academia must have drawn the connection between obesity and toxicity at some point. Because it makes a lot of sense. Another thing, too, is that your body will go into an immune system response called inflammation. Inflammation, we've all had it, also as a result of toxins. So this is the thing. I think there may be something here. And I'm mentioning this also because I've known a lot of people who've recently done the keto thing to lose weight because they're trying to trigger their bodies to burn the fat. And I totally understand. I totally get it. And it looks like probably one of the smarter ways to go about it. But a lot of people will talk about getting the keto flu and getting sick. And this is what I will tell everyone, okay, to do your own research. If you are overweight, like let's say you're like me, you're 50 or 60 or 70 pounds overweight. My advice to you is the advice I've been following for the last decade, and I will continue to follow until I die sometime in the year 2040, no, excuse me, 2032 in a slave camp somewhere in Iowa. But yeah, until I die there in the labor camp. My basic strategy has been slow your roll, which means exercise marginally, but you must exercise. And that's where I've been doing bad the last couple months. I have not been exercising. So exercise, but do it moderately. And lose weight, but lose it slowly. And even if you're losing it slowly, okay, you need to be careful. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to detoxify out there, to detoxify your body. I would highly recommend looking into stuff like that when you're losing weight. But this idea of rapid weight loss, it could be really, really dangerous. In fact, it could actually be one of the reasons why people get cancer. Okay, so that it wasn't really the fat that was killing them, but these weird cycles of gaining weight and losing weight and in really rapid ways. Because when you burn all of this fat, when you actually convert it, all the toxins that are locked up in the fats get released. They get introduced into the body. You know, if you were to take a core sample, if somebody took a core sample, like I were a tree, but if somebody took a sample of the fat in my belly and studied it, I have no doubt they would find some really nasty shit. I have no doubt they would find some terribly, terribly toxic shit from years and years and years of weight and also years and years and years of toxic exposure. So anywho, this is just a conjecture, not even sure it's original, but my advice to all of you out there, if you're out there losing weight, be careful. Don't be in too big of a hurry and don't be afraid to lose weight and then plateau for a while. I kind of think rapid weight loss is really, really unhealthy in general. Just as probably rapid weight gain is very unhealthy in general. Before I go, I'm going to mention that if you enjoy my podcasts, and I know that they're not always stellar, the one tonight, it was okay. But if you enjoy my podcasts, A, and B, if you have the resources, which means there's no one else in your life, including you, that needs the money, and I'm being serious about that. Lots of people need money these days. Lots of people need help. And I should be the last person on your list. But if you enjoy my podcast, and if you have plenty of resources, and you've taken care of all the problems you need to take care of, and you have a few extra bucks, I have a link to Venmo on my SoundCloud main page in the right-hand panel. It says donate Venmo, basically. And I will also include a link in this podcast so you can donate. It is not a revolving or automatic thing. Donate whatever you want to. You're not going to be charged monthly. You'll only be charged what you donate. If you donate 10 bucks, it's not going to pull another 10 bucks out of your account next month. And if it does, tell me, because that's bullshit. But if you have the resources and you want to donate, do it. I'm not too proud to accept help. And currently, I'm in a state of retirement, which means sometime in the spring, I'll have to work another contract for a fucking software company. But if somehow I can make money doing this, and maybe incorporate more technology, better you know, more interviews. I haven't had that many interviews yet. More interviews, maybe even interviews with people who are quasi-famous. I don't know how I would get that to happen. But the point is, if as resources are accrued, I can improve the quality. But if you enjoy blah, 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 donate. And I hope you have a great rest of your evening.